Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Until Tomorrow by Carrie Lee Harmon, narrated by Maeve Winlock. 1. Present day, Beacon Bay, Maine.
Damn it,
Emma Hendricks said out loud to herself. It was the end of June in coastal Maine, with temperatures in the 60s, but a definite bite to the air still lingered as she walked the jagged, rocky shores of Beacon Bay. She tightened the pink silky scarf at her neck and tucked the ends more securely into her pale blue fleece coat as the ocean breeze blasted her in the face. Inhaling a deep breath, she tasted the salty brine in the air as it brought a welcome sting to her lungs. It was better than living with the constant sting at the back of her eyes and the humiliation that inevitably followed. Beacon Bay was a small town along the middle of Maine's coast. Coastal Maine consisted of a rugged shoreline dotted with spectacular lighthouses, picture-perfect seaside villages, quiet coves, and peninsulas that jutted out like fingers reaching toward the sea in hopes of discovering lost treasures. There was nothing special about Beacon Bay in particular, which made it absolutely perfect for her. All she might very well have left was her work, yet her muse had deserted her. It had withered and dried out when she couldn't find any answers to all her questions. Emma was a strong, independent, modern-day journalist from Boston, known for her cutting-edge stories and knack for getting at the truth. But how could she get at the truth when all that she believed in was a lie? People didn't understand how she felt because they'd never seen her cry. She hadn't cried because she was still in denial, but that didn't mean she wasn't vulnerable like the rest of the human race. She'd been on top of the world, having achieved everything she'd ever wanted. And then, bam, her fiancé had to go and lose his mind. Her fiancé. Technically, he was still her fiancé. Nothing had been settled, and she didn't have any answers. She tucked the strands of her auburn bobbed hair behind her ears and stared out at the waves wildly crashing against the shore, like King Triton's fist pounding out a warning for sailors to take heed and enter at their own risk. She should have listened to her gut. Maybe then she wouldn't have gotten blindsided. She felt like raging back at the sea over the injustice of it all.
I hate you,
she shouted, giving in to the impulse. Mark had created quite a scandal with what he had done. Yanking off her engagement ring, she threw it at the sea, and a lump the size of a boulder formed in her throat, as if words or actions would do any good. King Triton wasn't Mark, and she had no clue if Mark would even care at all. She had no clue about anything, especially after what he'd done to her. She felt so helpless, which was the worst punishment imaginable for a person like her who had to be in control. Mark had been acting like a different person for months. She'd tried to talk to him to no avail, so she'd brushed off her instinctual feeling that there was something serious going on he didn't want her to know about. Nothing made sense. She clenched her jaw, fighting back a new wave of pain. But anger and bitterness had finally started to win the battle raging inside of her. One way or another, she would get to the bottom of what had happened. She could be tough, a no-nonsense kind of woman, but she'd had to be in her line of work. No matter how smart she was, or how many degrees or connections she had, she was still a woman fighting to make it to the top in a man's world. Deep down inside of her beat the heart of a sensitive woman with real feelings. Why did women have to start hiding their feelings to be taken seriously? She thought Mark had seen the real woman inside of her, and not just the firecracker reporter who got the job done at any cost. He'd hurt her more than she would ever admit to her well-meaning, stifling family. She came from money, and so did he, but she was beginning to wonder if that was all they'd had in common. How the hell had she let this happen? Emma started walking again as she reflected on the mess her life had become. She had always been too focused on work to worry about finding someone to share her life with, but at nearly 30, she wasn't getting any younger. Her mother feared she would wait beyond childbearing years and leave her without grandchildren, heaven forbid, even though she already had some from Emma's sister. Frankly, Emma wasn't even certain she wanted children of her own. But when her parents had introduced her to Mark, he'd seemed perfect for her. It was a win-win for both of them. He'd even said so himself. When had that suddenly changed? Emma spent the past 6 months trying to figure that out, and her work had suffered because of it. She read self-help books and had even spoken to a therapist, but nothing had helped. Needing to get away and hoping for inspiration, she'd taken a leave of absence, packed her bags, and headed to coastal Maine for the summer. Her favorite local Boston poet, Katie Ford, wrote the most moving poetry set in Maine, so Emma figured that was as good a place as any to escape. Neither her family nor her fiancé's would be caught dead in such a small town like Beacon Bay because it wasn't one of the it places to summer, as if summer were a verb. Emma couldn't face them right now, couldn't face anyone, because no matter what Mark had done, it was somehow her fault. No one came right out and said so, but she could see it in their eyes. When had he become the victim and not her? She wasn't angry at him. She was angry at them all. Being alone was her only option. Kicking a pebble with the toe of her hiking boot, Emma kept moving forward one step at a time, hoping she would be able to do the same thing to her life. Emma was the go-to girl. People came to her for answers to their unsolved mysteries, but this particular mystery was too much even for her. So she had stopped trying to figure it out and decided to move on with her life, though she knew a part of her never would give up until she had closure. She was searching for anything that might fuel her with inspiration, because if she didn't start to write again, she might not have a job to go back to in the fall. And then she would have nothing and end up lost and alone, which had secretly been her biggest fear of all. Not to mention, if she kept dwelling on all the possible answers to her problems, she might start to believe she wasn't good enough, which was something she'd struggled with her entire life. She lived in a world where the people had impossible standards no mere mortal could live up to. And frankly, she was tired. Tired of not being good enough for her family, not being good enough for the job, not being good enough for a man. Just plain not being good enough. An obsession like she'd never known took root in her gut. She'd survive this and prove them all wrong. Making her way further down the shoreline, Emma stumbled across a particularly treacherous section of the beach that looked as if it hadn't been walked on since explorers first stepped foot upon the stony bottom, if ever. It was low tide, and the water was way out, but not for long, judging by the sun in the sky. A strong whiff of fish and seaweed wafted past her nose. She was about to turn back when she spotted a glimmer. She held up her hand to shade her eyes and squinted to see more clearly. It looked as if the sun was reflecting off a shiny object. The object appeared to be way off, and it wouldn't be long before the tide swept back in to dole out its punishment for those foolish enough to venture onto sacred ground. Chewing her bottom lip, Emma debated what she was going to do, but really, there was no choice. She needed this. A force she couldn't explain propelled her forward and made her investigate. She walked toward the shiny object as quickly as she could, given the perilous conditions. The last thing she needed was a broken ankle this summer, or worse. When she finally reached her destination, she spotted an antique glass bottle that had apparently withstood the test of time, wedged between two rocks in a watery grave. Emma glanced up at the high cliff, thinking someone had probably tossed it out to sea decades ago. The water level had already risen to her knees, quickly bringing her attention back to the task at hand. Common sense said to leave immediately. She was too far out. This wasn't smart. Yet her feet remained frozen to the ground, and getting colder by the second as icy fingers seeped in and clawed at her tender skin. She couldn't leave. She'd spotted something inside the bottle, maybe some ancient piece of wisdom, or the secret to life, or the cure for cancer. It could be trash for all she knew, but one thing was certain: she had to free her treasure. Some crazy, irrational force kept her pulling at the bottle in an attempt to free it. But no matter how hard she pulled, the bottle remained in the same nesting place it had been for decades. Emma glanced out at the rolling waves furiously charging toward her. If she didn't do something quick, King Triton would win and she would become fish bait. It was silly and stupid and basically insane, but deep inside her mind, she knew she couldn't let King Triton win because that would be like letting Mark win. With one final tug, the bottle broke in half, and Emma winced as she cut her hand. The salt water stung her wound, but she'd freed her treasure, and that was the important thing. Ignoring the pain, she held up the piece of paper in victory. The water was waist-deep now, and she had to swim back to shore, which wasn't difficult at first, since the waves kept slamming against her and propelling her forward in their angry fury over her stupidity. Salt water burned her eyes and coated her tongue as she gasped for air. She couldn't control her shivering, and her clothes felt like lead, weighing her down as if urging her to give up the fight and find peace. Emma was a stronger person than that. Giving up wasn't in her nature. But she soon realized the task at hand was anything but easy. The roughest part was when the waves pushed her forward, then sucked her back, having fun as they toyed with her. They let her get close to shore and then yanked her away at the last second. At one point, she wasn't sure she would make it to safety, but finally, King Triton released his hold and returned her to her earthly hell at long last. For a brief second, Emma wasn't even sure she was thankful. Shaking off that crazy thought, she pulled herself to her soaking wet feet and held up her prize, shouting, "I will not be defeated!" She blinked, wondering for a brief moment if she had gone crazy, because she could have sworn she heard a whisper carried on the wind as it swirled about her in a voice as determined as her own. "No, we will not." March 1942, Beacon Bay, Maine. "Mrs. Kathleen Connor," Kathleen said out loud, yet somehow it still didn't feel real to her. She'd been married for 2 weeks now. Most women she knew married in their late teens, thrilled to have a man to take care of them and babies to raise. Kathleen had been the only one in her 20s, late 20s at that, and still single. Frankly, she'd been fine with that. She enjoyed her job as a teacher, loving everything about learning, having always longed for something more in life. It was almost like she was born in the wrong century. She often wondered what the future would be like. Would women ever have a say or be taken seriously? She had a voice, and she longed to be heard. It was her parents who had insisted she stop dreaming, settle down, and start a family. Be respectable. They'd told her she was too smart for her own good, and one day it was sure to get her into trouble. They meant well, but they didn't understand her. Her mother was an artist, selling her paintings in town, and her father and brother were fishermen who put food on their table. Not wealthy by any means, just simple, hard workers. Yet they still worried about how the townsfolk saw them. They never wanted to make waves, and had always looked at Kathleen as if they couldn't understand why the good Lord had brought such an outspoken, free spirit like her into their home. Kathleen sighed as she checked her reflection in the beveled mirror above the secretary desk by the front door of her new house. She'd learned to conform and fit in, even though she often felt she was born to stand out. Her house wasn't exactly new, as it was a 20-year-old white Dutch colonial with black shutters, but it was new to her. This life was all new to her, but it wasn't so bad. The house was charming, with its fireplace and living room embossed with box beams, oak built-ins, raised panels, and archways. Her husband wasn't wealthy either, but he had more than she'd ever had. Her parents felt he was quite the catch, and they were happy. At least that was something. She smoothed her caramel brown, shoulder-length waves and studied the sea-green eyes staring back at her. She'd never cared much for flirting with men and had never been in love. It wasn't that she was unhappy. Her husband, William, was a decent, respectable man from a good family who ran the local store. He would take care of her, provide for her, or so her mother had said, even though Kathleen had been perfectly happy providing for herself. What was so wrong with being independent and childless? Her parents were worried about how it might look to the citizens of Beacon Bay. Kathleen's happiness always came last. But now that the United States had joined the World War after Japan had attacked Pearl Harbor in December, what else was Kathleen to do but conform to society? Now was not the time to make waves, she reminded herself. It was time for people to band together and lend support. If her countrymen could make sacrifices, then so could she. Kathleen stepped outside and walked down the street to the general store. Their house was right in town on a side street a couple blocks away from her husband's store and the school where she worked. He owned an old Ford that he drove to work every day, but she preferred to walk along the streets lined with fluorescent and incandescent lights, flower boxes, and a few benches. It was spring, the temps still chilly, but the promise of new life hung heavy in the air. Maybe if she had a more positive attitude, she would feel better on the inside. This was Kathleen's shot at a new life, and she decided right then and there she wasn't going to waste it. William was working late, and she was bringing him dinner. So far, he had treated her amicably. She knew he wanted children, and she was doing her best to accommodate him, even though he didn't stir her blood like she had imagined he would. She was realistic enough to know she wasn't the most beautiful woman in town, but that didn't stop her from wanting the fairy tale. She had always thought she would either remain alone or marry for love. Never did she imagine she would marry for convenience, stability, and appearances. She blamed her desire for affection on her vivid imagination. It had always led her to believe there was more to love, more to marriage, more to life. Pulling her head from the clouds, she vowed to do better. William was older as well, with bright red hair and freckles. Not the most handsome man she'd ever seen, but he wasn't homely either. He was a large man with big hands and was socially awkward. He didn't exactly fit in. She had thought that would make him her perfect match. She frowned. Maybe she hadn't given them enough time to bond. While spring was upon them, winter had lingered, leaving an icy chill in its wake. Maine was like a wild animal, gorgeous, rugged, and untamed, but she loved everything about it and couldn't imagine calling any other place home. Kathleen pulled her ensemble of a matching gray coat and skirt closer together, trying not to shiver as she walked briskly down the street. To be honest, that's how Kathleen walked through life, briskly in search of an adventure, instead of strolling through the days content with her lot like so many others. So far, that hadn't worked well in her favor. Maybe it was time she slowed down and enjoyed the possibilities right in front of her. The war had caused the army to dole out restrictions on clothing in order to properly outfit the soldiers. The number of new clothing a person could purchase was limited, as were the accessories they could buy. Hats and gloves were still in fashion, but nylon was restricted for military use, so women had to resort to wearing those dreaded cotton stockings. Kathleen didn't mind, as cotton was practical, not unlike herself, but she knew a number of women in town who acted like wearing the plain material was the end of the world. She had no tolerance for people like that, which was probably why she didn't have many friends. Soldiers dying in the war were the real tragedies. Silk was rationed, as well as green and brown dyes, leaving women to opt for more red-dyed, simply cut blouses, shirts, and knee-length skirts. In fact, a lot of the men's suits were remade into square-shouldered jackets to match the women's skirts. Sturdy and sensible made sense. How pretty she looked had always been an afterthought for her. It only took 15 minutes to arrive at the general store. She came in through the back door and made her way to the front. The store had all sorts of goods, from food supplies to clothing to hardware goods to hunting paraphernalia. It had been a staple and success in Beacon Bay, both before and now during the war. She heard her husband talking to a few older men up front. His vision wasn't the best, preventing him from joining the Army or Navy. But she gathered from his conversation he wasn't all that heartbroken over not being able to go fight for his country.
"We never should have joined the war in the first place, if you ask me,"
William said from behind the checkout counter, looking larger than life with his tall height and stature.
"It was none of our business."
The war had put restrictions on men's clothing as well. He wore more narrow black trousers and a simple white shirt with the cuffs turned up. His only accessory was a fedora he'd placed on the hook by the front door next to his short jacket. His clothes were suddenly forgotten as his negative words drew Kathleen to his side.
"Oh, you can't believe that, can you?"
she said without hesitation, coming up behind him and setting his dinner on the counter. She pulled off her matching red hat and gloves as she talked.
"Hitler's a monster, and the whole world recognized that. I say it was about time the United States got involved. I don't know how anyone could stand idly by and not retaliate after a tragedy like Pearl Harbor."
"I agree, young lady,"
one of the old-timers said, looking at her with surprise, yet he seemed impressed.
"You sound like my son,"
another old man responded with a sad smile. shaking his head as if he didn't see the sense in any of it.
"Excuse me, gentlemen,"
William cut in with a pleasant smile of his own.
"I'm sure you won't mind if I steal my wife away for a moment."
The men grinned wider with knowing eyes, responding with, "Not at all," and "Take your time." William wrapped his arm around Kathleen, resting his wide palm on her lower back possessively, and the first little thrill raced up her spine, giving her hope they might stand a chance after all. He grabbed her hat and gloves from the counter as he led her through the back room until they escaped into the bright sunshine and fresh air. Kathleen turned around in anticipation, wondering if this was going to be a turning point in their relationship. A sharp pain exploded in her stomach, and she was sure she felt her rib crack. She doubled over in agony, struggling to catch her breath, and fell to her knees. Her vision faded in and out as stars danced before her eyes. What had just happened? It took her several moments, but finally she was able to pick up her hat and gloves and stand up straight to look her husband in the eye. She sucked in a breath. Big mistake. He looked like a monster. She stumbled back a step. His thin, flat lips were curled into a snarl, and his brown eyes were filled with fury. She didn't recognize him at all.
"How dare you?"
he growled. His hand was still fisted.
What did I do?"
she managed to get out on a whisper-filled sob.
"Don't you ever contradict me in front of anyone again, do you hear me?"
He thrust his finger in her face, and she flinched.
"I didn't contradict you. I know you can't join the war, even if you want to, because of your vision. I voiced my opinion on the war, not you. That's all."
Fear, like she'd never known, seized her body, her muscles stiff and frozen, leaving her vulnerable. She didn't know what to do, what to say. How could this be happening? She'd lived with him for 2 weeks and hadn't seen any signs that he could be capable of something like this. His father had been hard on him when he was a little boy, and from what she could tell, he still was, even as a man. She'd seen that while growing up, but she'd never really known his father. No one had ever hinted that he'd abused his son, but if he hadn't, then William must have been born pure evil. The thought of being married to someone like that terrified her.
"You're a woman. You don't have an opinion,"
he hissed.
"You made it sound like I am less than a man and a coward. No wonder you were still single at your age. I'm your husband. Doesn't that mean anything to you?"
"Yes," she managed to say. "I promise you it does."
She looked him in the eyes and silently pleaded with him not to hurt her again. Suddenly, he changed, as if her look was one he knew well, reinforcing her fear that he hadn't been born into a monster, he'd been raised into one. The rage left his face as quickly as it had appeared. He took a shaky breath, and then he wrapped his big arms around her, pulling her in for a tender hug.
"I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to do it. I didn't want to strike you. But you understand why I had to, right?"
His touch made her skin crawl, like tiny little bugs scurrying about beneath her skin. She fought back the impulse to vomit and pull away, though she would never forget his musky scent. It was ingrained on her brain, and she instinctively knew it would always bring back this haunting moment of his betrayal. The fear, the pain, the fury.
"How dare you,"
he'd said. "How dare he," she thought. Clamping her jaw tight, she nodded once sharply, hoping it was enough.
"Thank you for dinner, by the way. It was sweet of you."
He tipped up her face and pressed.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?